So good evening, everybody. Lovely to see so many people with us this evening. And tonight's share, the second in a series associated with the four Chalakim of Shulchan Aruch. So this is to do with Yoredeya. I want to look at issues in Tefillin and Mezuzot. And it's what we call stam. Stam in modern Hebrew, you talk about something stam, it means, yeah, you know, not talking about anything in particular. Here we are talking about things in particular, Sifrei Torah, Tefillin and Mezuzot, talking a little bit, less about the Sifrei Torah, but talking about Tefillin and Mezuzot. Many people might have seen in the course of the past couple of weeks or months, something which has come out here in London by a group calling itself the Vad HaRabbanim Le'Inyanei Stam, the Rabbinical Council for Matters Associated with Stam, with Sifrei Torah, Tefillin and Mezuzot. And we can see that those rabbis are Diane Gelly, Rabbi Hager and Rabbi Freshwater. And what they've done is they've licensed a number of sofrim and a number of outlets to sell Tefillin and Mezuzot. Now, of course, any list like this, it doesn't necessarily have any formal status. This is a group of rabbis, respected rabbis, but a group of rabbis who've come together themselves rather than being appointed by the Kehillah. They've come together by themselves to address issues of stam in the community. And they've chosen to license a number of sofrim. That doesn't necessarily mean to say there aren't other good sofrim around, but these are the ones that they've given their heksher to, as it were. So really want to try and talk about what this is all about. Why is it necessary, or why was it thought necessary, to have such a Vad HaRabbanim, and how it can help, or conceivably, I suppose, hinder the community in the correct observance of the mitzvot of Tefillin and Mezuzot. Now, again, this is another of the sort of strange aspects of this series of shiurim. I've said on a number of occasions, you know, we've called this contemporary halakhic issues. I don't think there's anything particularly contemporary about buying Tefillin and Mezuzot. Jews have had Tefillin and Mezuzot for many thousands of years, so it's not a new issue as far as that's concerned. And it's not a new issue we're going to see in terms of difficulty regulating and ensuring that people have kosher Tefillin and Mezuzot. But it's certainly a contemporary issue because the problems are as acute today as they always were. Now, in many aspects of religious life, we're not experts in technical details ourselves, and we rely on other people's guarantees. So, for example, I don't know very much about shechita, and I go and buy kosher meat. I don't just rely on the person who's selling it to me behind the counter in Sainsbury's or Tesco's to tell me, oh yeah, this is definitely kosher food. I want something which is going to assure me that this is kosher food. The same is going to be true with Tefillin and Mezuzot. A person's buying Tefillin or Mezuzot, they don't necessarily know whether this is kosher, whether it fulfills the technical details or not. So they're going to ask somebody for a guarantee of that. So what I want to do in the first part of tonight's share is to go through some of the issues associated with stam and to see what the consumer ought to be concerned about. Now, this next slide that I'm showing you is a picture of a high-quality mezuzah. This is what I believe is a very nicely written mezuzah. You can see that it's easy to read. I'm not going to say that the letters are formed well or not formed well, because, you know, at this point in time, we don't really know what it means that a letter is formed well or not well. But it certainly looks easy to read. It's that the letters stand out clearly. It looks nice. Many mezuzot that people buy don't look as nice as this, and one might come away with a mezuzah that looks something like this, which is a lot less clear, a lot easier, a lot harder to read. If you look at the compare and contrast the two mezuzot, you can see that one is, you know, of a clearly clearer ability to read it. I'm not saying that one's necessarily more kosher than the other. The next mezuzah I'm showing you is actually a picture I took of a mezuzah that somebody in the community gave to me a while back. But they showed me this mezuzah, which had been actually decided that it wasn't kosher. And you can say this mezuzah again seems to be much harder to read, and on the face of it, much less lovely. Now I want to pick out a few things that perhaps show the difference between the two mezuzot that we've looked at, sort of the last one that somebody gave me and the first one that we looked at. So I've taken the same lines here, and you can see that, again, as I said, one of them, the text is much clearer than the other. That in itself isn't necessarily a problem, but if we look at some of the details, we'll see there are significant differences. The first detail to point out is what we call the tagin, the crowns that go on top of the letters. There are a number of letters, what we call the Shatnez Gatz letters, which need tagin, which are supposed to have crowns on top of them. You can see the Nun and the Shin of Nafshechem have crowns. The Nun of Natati, the Tet of Matar, the Shin of Malkosh on the second line, the Gimel and the Nun of Daganacha, and the Shin of Tiroshcha, they all have crowns on top of them. If, however, you look at the top mezuzah, you can see that all those crowns are missing. Interestingly, there is a crown on top of the Tet, but none of the other letters that are supposed to have crowns have crowns. Now, does that necessarily make the mezuzah not kosher? It certainly doesn't make the mezuzah not kosher in of itself. The letters are supposed to have the crowns, but if they don't have the crowns, it's still kosher. But what it clearly shows that this is an inferior product, and it hasn't been written terribly well. To give a car analogy, and we're going to see more car analogies as we go through the share, it's a bit like buying a car and it doesn't have windscreen wipers. Or it's maybe without windscreen wipers it would be illegal to drive it, but it doesn't have, the windows don't open, and the radio doesn't work. So it'll certainly pass its MOT test. It's a car, but it doesn't really do what one would expect. So certainly if one's buying a kosher mezuzah, one would, generally speaking, expect that, you know, you're getting something which has got all the bits that are supposed to be there, even though it might be valid without it. Another consideration, of course, is that if a person's cutting corners with the tagging, with the crowns, then they might well be an indication that this is a second-rate sofer who's cutting corners elsewhere. If we think about cutting corners, if we look, if you look at the words b'chol nafshechem, the nafshechem in the second mezuzah, you can see how beautifully the nun is formed, with the head of the nun going across, right across the leg of the nun. So it's almost like a T. Whereas if you look in the top mezuzah, it's not like a T at all. And yeah, that again indicates that it's a poorly formed letter. So these are things that one might find, as we looked at those previous mezuzot, just to go back to those previous mezuzot, you know, this mezuzah that somebody in the shul gave to me. I'm not saying whether it's kosher or not kosher in the terms of the way that it's written, but it's certainly poorly written if you compare it and contrast it with the first mezuzah that we took. And of course, not everything is going to be the Rolls Royce of mezuzot or tefillin, but certainly one, if one's paying reasonably good money, then you would expect to have a reasonably good product in front of you. an issue just to flag up some of the complexities of the issues. I want to look at, for example, this is an illustration of the first mezuzah, the second mezuzah. You know, it's a bit like this car. You know, it might go, and it might even pass its MOT test. But, you know, it's nothing like this. And the second car isn't a Lexus or a Jag or a Bentley, but it's a nice car that drives decently. And I always, you know, suggest to people that the mezuzot and tefillin that they buy should reflect the type of car that they drive. Meaning that if you like a car that is more than a clapped-out old banger, so then your tefillin and mezuzot should be more than a clapped-out old banger, even though they might do the job. But you want something to be a little bit proud of. So what other issues might we be interested in and concerned in? Well, look at this letter Gimel. We all recognise it as a Gimel, but there might well be details of the Gimel that we're not familiar with. And we should bear in mind there are 22 letters plus 5 finals, so 27 letters in the Hebrew alphabet, each of which has many dinim associated with it. You might think that, to write tefillin and mezuzot, you just need to be able to write the letters. You know they're written with a quill, so it's a bit of a skill, but essentially it just needs to be written quite nicely. Let's look at how the Mishnah Brura tells us that the letters should be formed. The Mishnah Brura, as well as many other poskim, speak about the way that the letters should be written. So the Mishnah Brura says, Ot Gimel, the letter Gimel, Tye Gufa Kamo Zayin. The body of the Gimel should look like a Zayin, Lechatchila, in the first instance. So we can see that being like a Zion means that the right leg hits the roof in the middle rather than right at the edge. And likewise, all the left-hand branches of the letters which have tagging on them should be like a Zion. The top should be thick. You can see that it's thick. Vregel Yamin, and the right leg, Dak, is thin. You can see it's, I've blown it up a lot here, but it's a thin leg. V'yoreid ma'at l'mata yotem yerech smol. And it should be a little bit lower than the left leg. So you can see on this gimel, this is a very beautiful gimel, you can see that the right leg is a little bit, goes down a little bit lower than the left leg. Something that most of us, if we were to write a letter gimel in block, we wouldn't have thought of. But that's one of the requirements for tefillin and mezuzot. Now, I've taken the gimel out of the mezuzah that we looked at just before. You look at this gimel. It's a bit blurred. But I think you can see the problems that that exist. This was out of that mezuzah. We can see that if you look at the top of it, the stem is nowhere near the middle. The stem is right at the end. And if you look at the bottom, it looks a bit like some sort of dinosaur or something like that. But if you look at the bottom of that gimel, the right-hand leg is definitely higher than the left-hand leg. So these are things that, you know, I actually had to blow this up quite a bit, and I had to look at it very, very carefully, because it's a very small mezuzah to be able to pick up on this. But it's certainly not something which is microscopic. It's something which can be seen perfectly well with the naked eye. But this is, if not an invalid gimel, then it's certainly a second or third rate gimel at best. You know, it's missing its tagging on top. The stem isn't in the middle of the roof, and the right-hand leg isn't lower than the left-hand leg. I'm not sure also if the left-hand leg is pointing up at all or not. But these are the problems that are being encountered. So let's try and flag up some of the issues which might be relevant with regard to processing or making tefillin and mezuzot. And we'll start at the beginning. Tefillin and mezuzot, we know, are written on parchment. Parchment made out of the skin from kosher animals. It has to be processed, and the Shulchan Aruch tells us, in Orach Chaim Siman Lamed Bet Sif Chet, Tzarich HaKlaf Liot Me'ubad Ba'afat Tzimol Sid, so the klaf, the has to be processed and softened, but Tzarich She'yehi Me'ubad Lishmo, it has to be processed for the sake of the mitzvah. There's machloket exactly whether it has to be processed for the sake of the mitzvah with mezuzot, but certainly does for tefillin. For tov lahotzi bisfatav bitchilat ha'ibud, and it's appropriate that the person who's processing it should verbalize at the beginning of the process, sheum abdul l'shem tefillin or l'shem sefer Torah, that he's processing it for the purpose of making tefillin or a sefer Torah. Avalim abdul l'shem mezuzah pasul, if he processed it for to make a mezuzah and then wanted to use it for tefillin, it would be pasul. So I'm not interested so much now in the last line. I'm certainly interested in the previous part. So my parchment, or the parchment that my tefillin is being written on, I need to make sure it's not just that somebody ordered parchment on Amazon and got it delivered, because this has to be parchment which has been processed for the purpose of writing tefillin on it. Now, this is something that when you buy your tefillin, you will never know about, because it's not something that you can check. This is either the processor did say this or didn't say this. There's no way of knowing. Furthermore, there needs to be Jewish involvement in processing the hides. The Shulchan Aruch in Yoradeh says, Ein kotvin sefer Torah, al or behemachayv or ofat tmeim. You can't write a sefer Torah, and the same applies to tefillin or mezuzot, on parchment made from non-kosher animals. V'lo al or dag afilu tahor, nor on fish skin. It has to be written on the hide of kosher animals. They don't have to be shechted in a kosher way, but they have to be from a kosher species. The process has to be done by a Jew. Now, the Rama goes on to discuss that circumstances under which it can be done by a Gentile, but with Jewish involvement. What I can say is that it was quite widely reported a couple of years ago, there was a bit of a scandal going on, that some of the klaf, some of the parchment being sold for tefillin and mezuzot to be written on, was coming actually from the Far East, and was not being processed by Jews, and was not necessarily even coming from kosher animals. There certainly wasn't any Jewish involvement in it. Now, again, this is something, whether there was Jewish involvement in it or not, something you will never know just by looking at it. But that's a critical component of your tefillin or your mezuzot. If your tefillin or mezuzot are written on klaf, which hasn't been processed by a Jew for the purpose of the mitzvah of tefillin or mezuzot, then it's not kosher, and your tefillin or mezuzot are not kosher. It's not just the parchment. There are other raw materials as well. There's the ink. You might think that you can just go and buy a quink in W.H. Smith, Parker Quink, and use that. But the Shulchan Aruch tells us that the Sefer Torah, and the same applies to other things as well, needs to be made out of smoke which has come from various oily plants. It should really be made out of entirely vegetable products or tree products. So there are lots of details about the ink. Maybe b'diavad other types of ink are going to be kosher, but certainly in the first instance, if you're looking for a good pair of tefillin which is written according to the ideal halacha, or a mezuzah which is written according to the ideal halacha rather than cutting corners, then you would want to be sure that the ink is good ink. And again, that's something that you will never know just by looking at your tefillin and mezuzot. I've said sort of not cutting corners. I would say there are three levels, each of which has sub-levels, but three levels in tefillin and mezuzot and Sifrei Torah. There's the base level, which is this kosher? There's a in extremis level, or a cutting corners level, in the case where, you know, yeah, it's kosher, but it shouldn't have been done like this. It's not very good quality. And then there's a Mahadrin level. There's the Bentley level, or the Lexus level, which there's no obligation to have things which are a Bentley or a Lexus level. And that's taking things to another level, both of quality and cost. But I'm really talking here about things, you know, the standard level without cutting corners, but without the walnut dashboards either. You don't need a walnut dashboard on your car, but you do need a dashboard to make sure that the wires don't keep falling out. And that's what you want in your tefillin and mezuzot as well. You might not want the walnut dashboard level, but you certainly don't want the corners being cut out, and that's where the tagging are missing and the like. What do we have besides the ink? Well, the tefillin and the mezuzot need to be even written lishma. The Shulchan Aruch says, "Mitchilat haktiva yomar b'fiv," at the beginning of the writing, when the sofer starts writing, he has to say verbally. He has to say, "Ani kotev l'shem kedushat tefillin." I am writing this for the purpose of the mitzvah and the sanctity of tefillin. Umilvad's there, and beyond that, v'chol pam shekotev askara, every time he writes, the sofer writes Hashem's name, tzarech lomar shekotva l'shem kedushat Hashem, you have to say that I'm writing this for the purpose of the sanctity of the mitzvah of tefillin. Again, this is something that you'll never know about just by looking at the tefillin. All I can say is that if you look at a pair of tefillin or a mezuzah, and you pick up on problems like tagging missing and letters not formed in the ideal way, there's a reasonable chance to be concerned that this is a sloppy sofer who is not doing his job particularly well in several areas, and that we've got lots of issues to be concerned about. So that's just sort of something to flag up there. What else do we have? Well, we have writing in the correct order. What do we mean by writing in the correct order? So the Shulchan Aruch tells us that the letters have to be formed in a particular way, as we've discussed with the letter Gimel. And there might be a problem that a letter was written incorrectly, perhaps a bit was missing or something like that. And if we look just in the last two lines there in the Shulchan Aruch, va'acha shekatav lefanav chazav v'tiknam. So let's say you wrote a letter hey, but you wrote actually a dalad. You forgot to put in the little yud, the left-hand leg of the hey, and you've carried on writing, and then you suddenly realise, gosh, you know, I forgot to write that leg of the hey in. So you go back and write that in. Have sheloka sidra, and that means that the tefillin or the mezuzah has been written not in order. Upsulin, and the tefillin is pasul, or the mezuzah is pasul. That means you could have, you know, the sofer, it could be that he's writing his mezuzah, and he gets up to a word with a hay in it, and he's just about to write the left-hand letter, and then he hears one of his kids screaming for help. So he rushes out, takes care of the kid, comes back, and carries on with the next letter. You know, he just didn't realise, just, you know, made a mistake. And then he's at the end of the mezuzah, and he's going through it. He's just checking it through. And he realises that he's missed out the regel ha-hei. So he fills it in now. This is a problem of what we call kasidran. This means that the letters weren't written in the correct order. They have to be written in sequence. You can't go backwards. This is a difference with tefillin and mezuzot and Sifrei Torah and Megillot. So Sifrei Torah, you know, often happens. You find something's pasul, a letter needs correcting or rewriting, so you can rewrite it in the middle. Megillot, often the Sofrim don't start from the beginning. They start from somewhere in the middle, and then go write the first columns later on. But with Tefillin and Mezuzot, this is critical. And again, it's something that you would never know about were it not for the, you know, by looking at it, because you can't tell what order it's been written in. You're relying on the integrity of the sofer. And can you imagine, you know, a sofer who's writing a mezuzah? So he's written the first line. He gets up to the word va'ahavta, and he missed out the left hand leg of the hay in va'ahavta, and carried on right till the end of the mezuzah. So let's say it takes 2 hours to write a mezuzah. Okay? Then he checks through and he realizes that he missed out the regel ha-hei. He's just done 2 hours' work, which has to go in Geniza. It's not a kosher mezuzah. Sometimes it might take him longer to write a mezuzah. And this, you know, might be something that he can sell for 30, 40 pounds, whatever it is. And that's 2 hours' work and 30, 40 pounds, which, of course, is not a lot of money for 2 hours' work, down the drain, as it were. So the temptation to go back and write in that hay that nobody would know about is obviously going to be quite strong. What other things might we be concerned about? Well, we spoke before about the accuracy of the letters. We looked at the letter Gimel. And the Shulchan Aruch says in Or HaChaim, Tzarech l'dakdek b'chtivat ha'otiyot, you need to be very careful, shelo tishtane tzurat shum achat mehen, v'lo tidmeh la'acheret, that the appearance of any letter isn't altered and it doesn't end up looking like another letter, like a bet could end up looking like a kaf, or a nun could end up looking like a kaf. U'lechatchila yichtov b'chtivat tama, and ideally, you should write in a very clear, with a very clear writing, as the poskim say. You know, not the scrappy sort of writing that we saw in those poor quality mezuzot. That's not to say that those poor quality mezuzot are necessarily pasul by virtue of scrappy writing, but it's certainly not ketivat hamas. So it's not going to be. It's not going to have the dashboard in place. It doesn't need to be walnut wood dashboard, but it hasn't even got a plastic dashboard in place. So you've got the accuracy of the letters. Then you've got the software. The Shulchan Aruch tells us that you can't have a Sefer Torah which is written by a Masor, an Eved, an Isha, a Katan, or a Kuti. You can't have a Sefer Torah which is written by a woman, or a Katan, or a child, or a Kuti, or essentially a non-Jew. There have been scandals in the past of Sofrim employing kids, 11, 12 years old, as Sofrim, to do the writing for them, and such things. There are even stories about, in certain cases, of non-Jews being involved in writing mezuzot in Israel. You know, Arabs who can write a nice Hebrew and rush off a quick mezuzah. Somebody has asked a question in the chat about, so how can a letter be fixed if it's got to be kasidran? So that's a good question, and the answer will be that it depends on what the problem was. Sometimes what a sofer does when he says he's got to fix a letter, it's not that the letter is is actually pusle. It's just that it's perhaps wearing a bit thin, or something of that nature, or that it could sometimes be that the letter itself was written, was written all right, but it could be that it's touching another letter, particularly if the ink has spread due to maybe a little bit of moisture or something like that. So the letter, it was actually written correctly. It was written in sequence. And now what's just been done is sort of scraping away a little bit of a little bit of excess ink, or adding a bit of ink to a letter which is there. You might look at the, you know, the top of the Zion and see that it's wearing away at the edge. So before it wears away anymore, he's just bulking it out a bit. So he's not going to rewrite the letter. If the letter was pusle, then there would be a problem. So it would usually be that it's not yet pusle, but it's looking like it's going to cause problems, or that it was formed correctly, but it's just, you know, it's touching something else. So that's where something would be done about it. What other issues do we have to consider? Well, let's look at the process from almost from animal to head or to doorpost, and see what one is going to be concerned with. So first here we have the hide. Okay, this is the hide being tanned. The hide, and that will be then turned into parchment. Sorry, went the wrong way there. You've then got the ink that you're going to be writing with. You've then got into filling, a halakha that many people aren't aware of, is that after each of the parshiot is rolled up in the shel yad, in the hand to fill in, you have one long piece of parchment. In the head to fill in, you've got four separate pieces of parchment. They're rolled up and then they're tied up with a hair. Now, that's not a hair taken out of your shaitel, but it's hair from a kosher animal. And ideally, it should be an ox's hair. Okay. So, are you sure that the hair that's being used is not from the sofer's wife's head or shaitel, but from a kosher animal and from an ox? Then you've got the batim, the way that the cases are made. Have they been made in the correct manner? There are lots of details about that we won't consider this evening. Then you've got the tefillin need to be stitched up. What are they stitched up with? Well, I have seen tefillin which have been stitched up with string, but in actual fact, they need to be stitched up with sinew from a kosher animal. So has the sinew come from a kosher animal? Then you've got the issue of the ritsuot, the straps that go on the tefillin. Do they come from a kosher source? Have they been processed properly? And have they been painted correctly? We'll talk in a moment just a little bit more about the ritsuot. But if you look here, you've got six stages that you want to be assured of that is all good and kosher. And there can be hidden problems with any one of these stages. In actual fact, the letters in the mezuzah or the tefillin are the least of your worries, because the letters you can look at. And certainly, you know, even a layperson can tell whether it's written nicely or not nicely. And a layperson can tell if the tagin are missing or not missing. You might not be able to tell if every letter's formed absolutely kahalacha, but you can get a sense of whether this looks nice or not. But the other components, you've really no idea where they came from or what they are. So I suppose it's similar to buying a sausage, as it were. You go and buy a sausage. The sausage will have lots of components, or what they call ingredients, to it. And the ingredients will come from various sources. You've got the meat, but you've also got, with sausages, a whole load of rubbish in it as well. But besides the rubbish, you've got lots of issues in the, you know, lots of other ingredients. There might be spices, emulsifiers, flavourings, etc. And you want to know that every single one of those ingredients has got a had a good hechsher on it when it was when it came on to the next stage. So ultimately, you want to know that the person who's selling you that sausage or has put a hechsher on the sausage is a reliable person who's going to make sure that all the previous ingredients have equally reliable hechsherim. But if you look at this, you look at the tefillin, you're really looking at hechsherim from at least six different sources. I imagine with sausages, you're probably looking at hechsherim from more than six different sources. We would never buy a sausage without a good hechsher on it. We shouldn't be buying tefillin and mezuzot without a good hechsher on it either. Talking about the ritzuot, this is an illustration of a ritzua that I have problems with. I bought new ritzuot for my tefillin some years ago. This was probably about 5 years ago. And after I was alerted to some problems in the market, I discovered that you can see here that what's supposed to be the black paint simply peeled off the ritzua. It was a plasticky laminate on top of the ritzua. It looked amazing. You know, it looked really good. These looked like, you know, the nicest ritzua, the shiniest ritzua that I'd ever had. They looked wonderful. this was a worldwide scandal, the tick communities across the globe. But basically, somebody was having ritzuot made in the Far East, very poor quality leather, which wasn't being processed by Jews, and then having, rather than painting them, but was putting a plastic veneer on them. So there was a little bit of discussion in the poskim about the plastic veneer, and one or two poskim did want to suggest that the plastic veneer was in itself not a problem. But there were multiple other issues, particularly that the leather was a poor quality leather that was not being processed by Jews. And this was a worldwide problem. So these are all the things that one might be looking out for. Now, to date, there's been no supervision of Stam products in many, many places. It's not just in London. Many places in the world don't have any proper supervision. And Sofrim are supposed to be certified in order to operate as Sofrim. And they're supposed to have their credentials renewed every 3 years. This was set down by the Chatam Sofer a couple of hundred years ago. They should have a Ketav Kabbalah. But even if they have such a license, there's nothing to say, you know, that generally speaking, a Sofer won't necessarily be selling only his own material. As you might go to a Sofer to buy 10 mezuzot, chances are he hasn't written all of those 10 mezuzot. He'll have written some, but he'll very often be a middleman for somebody else. We'll want to know where he got his stuff from. And the software, you know, might look and seem like a knowledgeable, reliable, from nice person. But can we be sure that where his source is, where he's sourced his mezuzot from, can we be sure that they are good? What's he going to do if, you know, he gets a batch of mezuzot and he pays maybe £2,000 for them, and then he finds afterwards that there's some question about them? Is he going to write it off as a bad investment, or is he going to try and pass it on to an unsuspecting customer? Not necessarily as pasul, but because, you know, it's second rate, but not saying that it's second rate. And therefore, it's a very sensible procedure in all Jewish communities. It's well overdue That there should be some sort of supervising authority to make sure that, you know, the market is regulated, and that the consumer, who generally doesn't know very much about these things, is getting good quality products. Some years ago, I mean, this is going back 20 or 30 years, they tried in Israel to have that all things should be sold with a hechsher on, and that don't buy anything without a hechsher from the Vad Mishmeret Stam of the Ravanut HaRashit. And that didn't last very long for two reasons. Number one, there are just so many sofrim in Israel, it was impossible to properly implement it. You know, so many people in Kolanim and Yeshivot are writing Sifrei Tefillin and Mezuzot. There was a lot of very good stuff on the market, which just they couldn't be bothered to get hechshered and such things. So it was difficult from that point of view. And then there was a lot of forging of the, not only forging Tefillin and Mezuzot, but forging hechsherim. And the market was just flooded with dud items with forged hechsherim. Somebody's asking a question. Let's see what the question here is. Why doesn't the LBD do any kind of certification? That's a very good question. The best answer to that is you should ask the LBD. But besides that, I'll make a number of observations. Number one, they actually did try this some years ago, about 10 or 15 years ago. The LBD was putting hechsherim on mezuzot coming from a particular outlet in Israel, a particular very reliable outlet. The consumer wasn't really interested in them at the time. There were some irregularities in the way that they were being sold. Some of the vendors were selling stuff which they claimed had LBD hechsher, but didn't. The other answer to this question is that it's a massive undertaking to be able to provide enough tefillin and mezuzot with a good hechsher. The fact that Dayan Gelly, who of course is the Rosh Beit Din of the London Beit Din, is involved in this this hechsher, indicates there's at least some sort of involvement from the LBD. And without going into the politics or really knowing the politics of this issue, I think it's reasonable to assume that it was presumed that it would be more effective if this wasn't just one of the Batei Din managing this issue, but that it was a shared initiative between representatives of the various communities and Batei Din in London. So I think that's the reason. You might well ask, you know, why doesn't, you know, the LBD put, you know, hechsher on all sorts of, you know, religious, you know, items. And, you know, maybe one day they will. You might ask the same question about Arba Minim. You know, why don't all Arba Minim come with a hechsher on? It would be very good if they did. Talitot and the like, but it's a good question. As I said at the beginning, this isn't really, this is a contemporary issue, but it's not a new issue. So I just want to bring to your attention, you know, comments. I mean, hundreds of people, dozens of people have written about this, but comments of the Chatam Sofer, who lived in the 18th century, very famous Chatam Sofer, Rav Moshe Sofer, leader of Hungarian Jewry, And he wrote as follows in a tshuva to do with tefillin mezuzot. Uvemet rabah machashela shetachat yadam b'tefillin mezuzot. He says it's a terrible situation as far as tefillin mezuzot is concerned. But did he have a uvda? He says, I had this case. Bekayis hava last summer. Be'achat shayu lo yoter me'esrim mezuzot limkor. Somebody who was trying to sell 20 mezuzot. V'kulam hayu psulim leinei koroehem. And they were all pasul. Anybody could have told, seen that these were pasul. Upsaltim, and I said that they were pasul. And he just shrugged his shoulders and went and sold them right under my nose, in my own backyard. Al kain kol bal nefech yachush. Therefore, everybody who's concerned about religious matters should be really careful about these things. So the Chatam Sofer 200 years ago was Shrine Gewalt about the fact that there was unregulated and rogue traders around. The Aruch HaShulchan, writing 100 years ago, he says something very similar. What does the Aruch HaShulchan say? Bedor parutz halazeh. In this wayward generation, Shebav, you know, we always think that, you know, in Europe, everything was kosher v'yosher in Europe. They did it the way it should be done. The Aruch HaShulchan is saying, "Bedor parutz halazeh, shebavonotenu harabim hamuna nitrofafa, v'hasofrim rabu ka'arbe." There's no people, you know, aren't as frum as they should be. Sofrim, this very sharp language. The sofrim, there are as many sofrim as like locusts. There are lots of nicer ways of saying there are lots of sofrim, but he's chosen this way of saying they're like locusts. We know in one place, unfortunately, lemeot sofrim, they've got hundreds of sofrim, vrubam einam yirei shamayim klal, and most of them aren't God-fearing at all. Misham pashtam ispachat b'chol arei medinateinu, and this scab has spread across the whole country, he says. Mezazrim b'mekach mod, they really treat this terribly. V'lochim l'mod narim reikim she'im behem lachuchit yirat shamayim. They take people, youngsters, who don't have any sense of yirat shamayim whatsoever. U'mochrim tefillin mezuzot bad mat v'od ketanot, and they sell tefillin mezuzot cheaply, because they write loads every day. Certainly they don't stop to say that I want the Shem Hashem to be Kodesh, etc., etc. The whole thing, he says, is a load of rubbish. And this is going back 100 years. Nothing's changed in the past 200 years since the Chatam Sofer, or the past 100 years since the Aruch HaShulchan. There's always been problems, and consumers need to beware. Why are there problems? I think it's a two simple answers. One is it's unregulated, and a lot of the stuff nobody will ever know about. The other consideration is that the consumer doesn't want to pay for good stuff. If you look at the nice mezuzah. Go back to the nice mezuzah we saw at the beginning. Right, that's written, with calligraphy. It's much harder to write with a quill on parchment than it would be with a metal pen on paper. Even if you were writing, as calligraphy, I would think that a skilled sofer is not going to be able to do it produce something nice looking in less than 2 hours for a mezuzah. You've then got a small amount for raw materials, needs to be checked independently. We recommend checking by computer as well. So if you think of just call it 2 hours work, you're looking at a highly skilled professional. I say it's a highly skilled professional because none of us could do that. £15 an hour is not an awful lot of money, minus the raw materials. But people very often don't want to spend more than £30 on a mezuzah. So the good stuff is, you know, a sofa who writes a nice mezuzah is not going to sell it for £30 because it's, you know, that's 2 hours work for £30. If you give, there's a limit to how many mezuzot you can write in a day because of the smallness of the writing, etc. Even if he can write three mezuzot a day, writing for 6 hours without getting, you think about the cramp on the hands and the eyes. So I would think that it would be impossible for a sofer to write more than 6 hours a day. At £30, £15 an hour, you know, he's getting £90 a day. That's if he can write three mezuzot a day. Likelihood is he probably can't. He can probably only write two mezuzot a day. But people want to pay only £30 for a mezuzah. So if you only want to pay £30 for a mezuzah, you're going to come out with something that looks like a load of rubbish, basically. And if you think about the work that goes into it to produce something nice, then you can understand why these things aren't cheap. If you think about tefillin have eight parashiot. Let's say that on average each parasha takes an hour to write. So it's going to take 8 hours to write, to write the parashiot. This is skilled labour. Work out what a professional should get for, 8 hours work, and then work out all the other materials and the time and labour put into them, and you get your price of your basic tefillin, not cutting corners, but not mahadrin pair either. How important is it to have good stuff? The Shulchan Aruch says at the beginning of Hilchot Mezuzah, Mitzvah tase lichtov parashat Shema v'ayam Shema. So the mitzvah is you write the two parashiot of Shema v'ayam Shema, lekov hamam mezuzot hapetach, you put it on the doorpost. But tzarech lizayir ba mo'od, you need to be really careful about this. V'chol ha'zahir ba, Shulchan Aruch tells us anybody who's careful about this, yarichu yamav v'mei vanav, then his children and his life and his children's life will be long. V'meinu zahir ba, if he's not careful about it, it cuts through. Chas v'shalom, they'll be cut short. That's the basis for, people when something, they're worried about something. They have their tefillin, they have their mezuzot checked. As you go and have your mezuzot checked if you're worried about something. They tell the joke about the person, the father who was distraught, his three children had all become frum. So he goes to the rabbi to ask, why is it that all my sons have become frum? None of them will eat in my house. None of them will travel on Shabbos. It's terrible. Well, where have I gone wrong? The rabbi says, maybe you should check your mezuzahs. But that's where the notion comes from. So these are really important things. I think it's a very positive step for the community in London, that we can now be assured that there are at least certain vendors who are licensed and recommended. And, I think we can be confident that what we buy from them will be of good quality, and that it will be kasher lechatchila, i.e. kosher in the first instance. Hopefully over the course of time there'll be other sofrim and other vendors who come on board and see the value of this as well. And I think it would be a really great thing for the community. I think now there was something like 6 or 7 sofrim have signed up to be part of this initiative. I think it would be really great if over the course of time we can have 15 or 20, so that there's much more choice for the consumer. I think that would be brilliant. And the more choice and the more options there are for the consumer, the better. But I think this is a really positive first step in making sure that the man or woman on the street who's buying Stam, tefillin and mezuzot, is assured that what they're getting is good quality, kosher stuff, rather than these have been problems throughout every Jewish community for hundreds of years, and people paying good money for bad products, which we never want. So add can for this evening.